Welcome to DNA Today. I'm your host, Kira Dineen. I talk all things genetics Mondays at 11:30 a.m. on WHUS.org and 91.7 FM. I cover genetics news stories, teach genetic lessons, and this week I'm hosting professionals in the field of genetics on the show. So this week I have three guests, Georgia Hirst, Amy Breyer-Shainman, and Ellen Matloff. They're involved in raising awareness for hereditary cancer by holding tweet chats on Twitter under the tweet chat hashtag HCChat. So welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's awesome to have you guys on, and I don't think I've ever had three guests on at once, so this is definitely going to be quite a talkative show here. So I want to start by introducing each of you and your background, what you're doing in genetics or healthcare, you know, in hereditary cancer. So Georgia Hirst is a Lynch syndrome advocate and was recently granted nonprofit status for IHaveALynchSyndrome.com. Definitely go check it out. She has Lynch syndrome, which is an inherited disorder that increases the risk of many types of cancer, particularly cancers in the colon and rectum. And she writes for her own blog, other blogs, medical journals, and Cure Today, so quite the writer. And her mission is to educate doctors and the public around the globe about Lynch syndrome. So welcome, Georgia.
Yay.
So Amy Breyer-Shainman is known as the BRCA responder, and she's at BRCA responder on Twitter. And she is a hereditary cancer and BRCA health advocate and BRCA1 positive prever. And she's also the executive producer of the upcoming documentary Pink and Blue. And this is a documentary about hereditary cancer, the BRCA mutations, and male breast cancer. Our last guest here is Ellen T. Matloff. She's the president and CEO of My Gene Council. My Gene Council is a digital health tool that will increase the effectiveness of genetic testing and precision medicine, something we talk about on the show quite a bit. Ellen has worked in clinical cancer genetics for more than 18 years and was one of the key plaintiffs in the Supreme Court gene patent case in 2013. So we have quite an amazing round of guests here today, and we've got some great questions to really pick at their brains a little bit. So I want to start out by talking about the hereditary cancer tweet chat you guys host. What are these like? How do they work? Give our listeners kind of a little taste for what they could expect.
Amy, you want to talk about it?
Okay. So basically, Amy and I met about a year ago on a tweet chat, and we became very good friends, and we recognized that there were a lot of parallels between the hereditary cancer syndrome. And we thought our advocacy efforts would be far more effective if we partnered and focused on hereditary cancer rather than solely on BRCA, which Amy has, and Lynch syndrome, which I have. And then we thought it would be a stellar idea to ask Ellen Matloff if she would be interested in participating in these tweet chats with us, since she's an amazing genetic counselor. So she agreed, and we've had three tweet chats so far, and they have been very successful. We talk about various hereditary cancer syndromes and the issues that surround them, and our next tweet chat is coming up on April 29th, and we'll be talking about prophylactic hysterectomy and oophorectomy and sex following that surgery, and we will have Dr. Bober from Harvard joining us for the conversation to answer questions. We realize that these tweet chats are very helpful and effective because they can reach a very wide audience, and we can reach a lot of people in a short amount of time. We really like the idea of the three of us co-moderating, and then we bring in a special guest for each one of these chats to kind of answer questions for people. And we think it's just a great way to get the word out about hereditary cancer syndrome.
Right, and it's instant feedback, too, because you have experts right there that can give you an answer to your question, or, you know, you have Georgia or myself or Ellen, who has been through you know, those preventative surgeries, you know, both of us don't have our ovaries anymore, you know, and Ellen, who is the genetic counselor and can come in and answer those questions immediately. So it's instantaneous in terms of getting instant feedback and support.
That's fantastic that you just have that collaboration, that you have patients and also the genetic counselor aspect to be able to answer both of those and have both of those perspectives.
It's really been a great collaboration thus far. And, you know, I think addressing hereditary cancers as a group is really where things are going.
Definitely, yeah. So what other ways do you guys advocate for hereditary cancer? You have the tweet chats that are happening, and you're really developing those. And your next one you said was April 29th? Yes, April 29th.
9 p.m. Eastern, okay. Under the hashtag HCChat.
Yes, yeah. Hereditary Cancer Chat.
Right. And all of this information we're throwing at you listeners, you can go to dnapodcast.com. All the information will be on there. So definitely take it in as we're talking, but don't be afraid if you miss something.
Right. So Georgia has Lynch syndrome and her website, and she just has her nonprofit status, so we're very excited for her. And for myself, I do a weekly BRCA and hereditary cancer news that pretty much this last 2 weeks covered Angelina Jolie. She was pretty much the news. And I tried to cover in my news the best articles that I felt that were out there, the most educational surrounding, because there were so many, and you know, a lot of them didn't have exactly the best information or most correct information. So that's what I try to do with my news, is get the best articles that are out there during the week on hereditary cancer and the most current research, science, tweet chats that are going on, in addition to ours, and resources and support that's available out there.
So you mentioned Angelina Jolie. She's been in the news for the past 2 years surrounding genetic testing and her decisions with that, and her decision to be very public with this information, her going through the double mastectomy, and also recently, this past month, removing her ovaries. How has she really impacted? We see her name in the news, but how has she really impacted people's opinion and level of education of genetic testing and genetic counseling?
Perhaps I can speak to that. When
Definitely.
Angelina made her first, when she wrote her first letter to the New York Times, I was the director of the Cancer Genetic Counseling Program at Yale, and overnight we saw a 40% increase in referrals.
Overnight? 40%?
Overnight.
That's insane.
40%. And so we, at the time, thought that it was likely a temporary trend, that it wouldn't last. But in fact, it never went back down to baseline. And we saw people calling to make referrals and patients calling to make appointments, not only for hereditary breast and ovarian cancer, but for other types of cancer as well. They would say things like, you know, in my family, it's hereditary thyroid cancer, but I've been avoiding genetic testing for years. But now I think I'll come in and find out what it's all about. And so it really changed the landscape of genetic counseling and testing.
She kind of makes it seem more human. It's kind of like not as scary. Maybe that's Angelina Jolie's going through it. She's going through genetic testing, genetic counseling. Oh, I can go through that too and look into the options. And definitely a huge impact, the Jolie effect.
Well, I think so. And I think it went from being a very rare, you know, maybe you've read about it once before type of a discussion that people rarely had, to being a discussion that I overheard in coffee shops. People were having these discussions all the time. It really normalized it, and I think that's been a great gift to the community.
Certainly.
Right. Right. It's become less taboo, I think, especially with even just within families. I think that it's not such a scary topic, and it's not like you're whispering, you know, cancer anymore. Because I know, like, in my own family, it's definitely, you know, there are certain family members that we have a hard time discussing it. But let me tell you, after this latest op-ed, they're following me more and they're paying attention more. So I definitely think she's brought, obviously, the global awareness, Angelina, but you know, we're trying to pick up those pieces and get the education components, I think, out there.
Yeah, and kind of fill in the gap. I think the one thing that is really important to mention in this conversation is that men are also susceptible to holding the BRCA mutations, and there are implications for them as well. And the other thing is that people really need a constellation of resources to kind of help them navigate through their cancer journey or their knowledge of knowing they have a genetic mutation journey, especially if they're taking prophylactic measures such as the hysterectomy and oophorectomy. The reason why I started my blog was because I was 40 years old and I was very healthy and I had the hysterectomy and oophorectomy for prophylactic reasons. Screening for ovarian cancer is very poor, and so I wasn't willing to take that risk. And so the hell that followed my surgery was really the impetus for my blog and website. And I basically created a site for people because there really wasn't a lot out there regarding the emotional gravity of having Lynch syndrome. And so I really wanted to address that because I knew I could not possibly be the only one talking about that. So I think that's something that people need to be aware of. It's great that Angelina has done this and raised terrific awareness, and I tremendously applaud her. I think we all do, but I think people need to realize that it's a little more complicated, and the journey can be difficult, and it requires a number of resources, and I think genetic counseling is absolutely essential in the process. I speak to many, many people on a regular basis who reach out to me who have Lynch syndrome, and most of them that are having the most difficulty with Lynch and their diagnosis are the ones who have not sought out genetic counseling. So I think that's extremely important because genetic counselers are fonts of knowledge, and they can provide one with remarkable resources to really help them get through the journey and to maintain their health and to basically save their lives. So
when you were considering going through genetic testing, was most of your decision based on your own research and experiences, or was a lot of it from a genetic counselor giving you the information to make that decision?
Well, I saw my brother die from colon cancer at 36. Mm-hmm. So, you know, watching that was very difficult. And I actually knew there was a genetic component to the colon cancer in my family. So I began having colonoscopies immediately after my brother's death. I was 25 when I started having colonoscopies. I'm 44 now, and I've already had 13 colonoscopies, even though I was just diagnosed with Lynch 4 years ago. So fortunately for me, I married into a family with a gastro, and I was able to have colonoscopies every 2 years, even though I did not know I had Lynch. So I've been very vigilant in that regard. When I found out I had Lynch, I was in graduate school. I did meet with a genetic counselor. I did my own research, and I decided, yes, this was the best option for me. Also, being a motherless child was a big influence in my decision. I was afraid of leaving my son motherless, and I know what that's like firsthand, so I did not want to put him through that. So I think my experience as a child of losing my mother, coupled with my seeing my brother die from colon cancer, and then actually having my other brother lose his colon to colon cancer, was really, it was more than enough for me to get genetically tested and to go ahead and have the prophylactic surgeries in order to take charge of some of my genetic destiny.
Definitely. That's a lot of hard things to go through to come to that decision and just to have that experience. your organization aims to help people kind of be a support, right? To have, you're not the only one out there, that there's other people. And do you bring people together? Is it more of just posting and people reading, or are you able to meet with people or introduce people to each other that also have Lynch syndrome?
I do all kinds of things. I mean, I do everything from partner people up who have similar mutations to helping them get genetic testing, to helping them find genetic counselors. I have people write guest blog posts for me. I do a number of things. I try to provide them with resources, finding them doctors, psychiatrists, psychologists, whatever they need. They are more than welcome to reach out to me, and I'm more than happy to help them. I never want anyone to feel as alone and isolated as I did when I was initially diagnosed. So people know that they can always call me day or night to talk to me about, knowing that they just found out they have Lynch syndrome. And like I said earlier, most of the people who reach out to me are the ones who do not seek out genetic counseling, which I think is highly problematic. And I really encourage everyone who is considering genetic testing to seek a genetic counselor before and after testing. And, many times, many people are able to maintain their relationship with genetic counselors, which I think is really important, especially, and Ellen can probably chime in on this a little bit. They're great for letting you know about clinical trials and helping you find additional resources, which you may need. Ellen?
I'd love to speak to that. I mean, genetic testing is a very powerful tool, but it's powerful if used correctly, but it's also powerful if it's used incorrectly, unfortunately. And what we've seen over the past decade is a lot of people being convinced, often by genetic testing companies, that this is an easy thing to do, you can do it yourself, you don't need to refer your patients to genetic counselors. And so a lot of physicians and nurses, and now it's even happening with mammography techs, are kind of throwing up a shingle and saying, we do genetic counseling, when they're not trained or certified in this area. So what we've seen is that people have had the surgeries that Amy and Georgia have described, only to later find out that they don't carry a true mutation and that they didn't need the surgeries. Or in the reverse, people who should have had these surgeries and were told they weren't at risk and later developing a cancer. So my group documented the third round of these cases in a paper recently. And with personalized medicine coming to the forefront, more and more people will be offered genetic testing. And making sure that people are given the right information, and also that they and their physicians are advised on how to use the information correctly, is going to be imperative in order to make this movement a success.
So you are the president and CEO of My Gene Counsel. How does this help educate people and patients? Is it patients and physicians on genetic language, if we can call it that?
I wouldn't say it's genetic language. It's really on how to interpret genetic test results and what to do with those results. And really, that's the entire mission of the company, is to make sure that genetic test results are used appropriately, and that both the clinician and the patient, and we now call them consumers, that they are educated and have the resources they need to use their information correctly. And part of those critical resources are people like Amy in Georgia, who have been through it themselves and who can advise men and women in their situations more accurately than anyone else could, because they've been through it.
And as you said, men and women are both affected with a variety of genetic diseases, one being BRCA, that women, or people may think that women are more affected, or that only women are affected, when it is also males. Amy, can you tell our listeners a little bit about your documentary, Pink and Blue?
Sure. I saw that a friend of mine was friends with a guy on Facebook named Alan Blasberg, and I saw that he was directing this movie called Pink and Blue, and it caught my eye. So what is this? you know, because I live in this advocacy world of BRCA and trying to get information out there. And then to make a long story short, I ended up connecting with Alan through this friend, and we talked at length over the phone about what he was doing, his vision for the movie. He is a BRCA2 positive male. We had way too many similarities on our family history stories. He lost his sister, a grandmother before he was even born. You know, his sister is a previvor like myself, meaning that we've never had cancer. However, we are positive for a gene mutation. We have a high risk for cancer. And so we had the same mission of wanting to educate people on hereditary cancer, talking about the male side of things, getting, you know, the blue out of the shadows of the pink, and really talking about BRCA. But the movie itself, we're talking about genetics in a way that is hopefully non-threatening, so people will feel comfortable calling up and reaching out to a genetic counselor. We're just showing these stories of the decisions that people make surrounding risk. And if the goal, if at the end of the movie someone says, you know what, I'm having a feeling that maybe I need to look into this a little further, you know, that means everything to us. If we can get somebody to pick up the phone and find out more about their own risk, that's pretty much what we're trying to do. But definitely male breast cancer, BRCA2 related male breast cancers in men, although, you know, it can also affect one as well. But we're just trying to get the word out on hereditary cancer, and obviously this is the right year to do it based on now the second op-ed coming out. So I feel like we have a really good momentum going, and hopefully a lot of people will end up seeing it.
And it's coming out this summer?
No, it's coming out some point over the summer, hopefully July, maybe August. We have a couple of last interviews that we need to wrap up and then editing, and it's done.
Fantastic. And once it's available, where can people find it?
Well, we're going to hit the festival route, and we have some things that I'm just sort of going to keep a lid on it right now.
Okay.
But it will be out there, and as big and as broad as we can get it out there, basically. The exact route as of now, it will be playing as far globally as it will reach, put it that way.
Fantastic. Definitely keep me clued in on that, and I can let my listeners know as it gets closer and there's more information available.
Great. Yes, we'll definitely do that.
Awesome. And I just want to remind everybody of Tweet Chats and what you're doing with that. The next one is April 9th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Definitely tune
29th,
into that.
April 29th. Right.
Sorry, April 29th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Hashtag HCChat. And also at HC_chat, talking about hereditary cancer. So thank you so much, guys, for coming on. Any concluding thoughts?
Just if people want to go and follow us there, they can definitely keep up to date with Ellen, my gene counsel, Georgia, she with Lynch, and myself, Amy, at BRCA Responder, because all of our Twitter handles are on there under HCChat.
Awesome.
I guess I would also say, if you have a personal history or a family history of cancer and it's crossed your mind that maybe it's hereditary and you want to go speak to a genetic counselor but you're not sure if you want to have testing, know that you can go and just hear your options and you do not have to have genetic testing. Just go and learn your options, educate yourself.
Yes, that's key. Thank you, Ellen, for...
Yeah, especially if they're early onset cancers under the age of 50. You know, those are definitely the ones that should concern you, I think.
And pay attention to men in the family, prostate
cancers,
melanoma, pancreatic cancers.
Those are all signs.
Ask
questions. Oh. Do your research on your family history. And if you're looking for a genetic counselor, you can go to the National Society of Genetic Counselors webpage at nsgc.org and find a counselor in your area. If there are no counselors in your area, these services are also available by telephone and are often reimbursed by insurance companies. One large company offering such services is Informed DNA.
Ellen, would you also mind talking about testing negative for BRCA and then being tested for Lynch, please?
So I think because BRCA has gotten so much press over the last few years, and as I mentioned, a lot of people have been doing testing who really aren't well educated in the area, there's some overlap between syndromes. And so, unfortunately, we've had patients and families in the past with multiple cases of ovarian cancer who've had genetic testing for BRCA. They've come back negative. They've been congratulated. And then other family members are diagnosed with cancers and die. And what we're finding is they've been tested for the wrong thing. So there's overlap between BRCA and Lynch syndrome and BRCA, and also between BRCA and P53, between CDH1, P10, all of these different genes. And so if you have a personal or a family history of cancer, get yourself to a certified genetic counselor. Don't settle for less. There are literally dozens of cancer genes, and you need to make sure that you're having the right test.
And that it's interpreted correctly, because
absolutely.
I've seen that, and that's, yes, Ellen, that's very, very important information that Ellen just said.
Thank you, Ellen.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Ellen.
Well, thank you so much, all three of you, for being on the program. We really appreciate just hearing your insight on all of these and just how important genetic counseling is in making decisions of genetic testing and the decisions that come out of genetic testing, that these are really important things and you want to have a professional that is really going to give you the right information.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, thanks so much for having us.
So you can
thank
tune
you
in.
Very much.
Yes. And you can tune in next Monday at 11:30 a.m. to learn and discover new advances in the world of genetics.